Welcome to the latest podcast from the Watercolors Aquarium Gallery, brought to you from the Aquarium Rush Studios in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We have a complicated topic, to say the least, today. Don't worry, it's not controversial. We're going to talk about killifish.
I'm excited because on this one, I don't have any notes. I'm here to learn. So I know a little bit about killies, but certainly not a lot. So I'm pretty excited about this one.
I'm excited about this one because I had a very specific moment with Ben probably like 2 years ago at this point. And at this time, I was only working at the store part-time. I think I was only working like 8 hours a week. And so I hadn't spent a lot of time with Ben. I didn't know him that well. He and I clearly got along, and that was really about it. But one day I came in just kind of like off the cuff. I was walking from the Institute to Watercolors. I was thinking about it, and I walked in, and I said, "So, Ben, how much do you know about killifish?" And he literally stopped typing on his computer, pushed away from his desk, looked me in the eye, took his glasses off, set them on the desk, and said, "A lot. What do you need to know?" And I said, "How many species have you bred?" And he goes, "I think somewhere around like 30, 40 is the number."
No, it's about 15 or 16, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was just so funny because, like, even in the moment, I could tell you were joking, but not that much. And it was just, I don't know, it was great. And that confidence was so inspiring.
I like it. That's very cool. I didn't know that it was that inspiring.
That was the moment that got me seriously thinking about killifish.
Well, and it was at a period, like, because I remember, like, when you were coming around at that time, and you had been, like, sort of looking at what the next step was for you in fish keeping. So I think it might have been a timely thing for you, too, in that way.
I remember specifically asking the question, "So how nerdy are killifish keepers?" And you were like, "The nerdiest."
Absolutely.
Like, I was like, perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a couple of reasons why you would be drawn to killifish. But one of the main reasons is we kind of got to know each other because of your interest in wild type bettas. And the original description of the first species of betta, Betta pugnax, it was originally described as a killifish. Sometime in the mid-1800s, they thought it was originally a type of killie.
That's actually why I started thinking about killifish.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, when I was trying to figure out how to organize this podcast, how to organize my notes and how to talk about killifish, the first thing that came up was just how diverse they are. So maybe it was their diversity and the amount of misconceptions surrounding killifish. First, the diversity of killifish. When you're talking about killifish, it's almost like talking about cichlids, only they're found in more places. So there are about 1,300 different species of killifish and counting found all over the world. It's almost easier to talk about where they're not found.
And I kind of want to frame that to people. There are about 30,000 species of described fish. That means that killifish are like 5% of fish species.
that's a lot.
Yeah.
I wonder what the percentage of, if you take killifish, cichlids, and catfish, then there's like two others left over, right?
Yeah.
That's a joke, but.
Oh man, I'm actually doing the math in my head. I think that works out to around 6,000-7,000 species.
So those three groups, I had to say groups because it's not families. There's five or six different families of catfish. There's six families of killifish. Cichlids is still just one family.
Yes.
Yes. Anyway, we're going down all kinds of different tangents as well. So an extremely large group of fish. Yes, it does consist of, it's either five or six different families. So killifish is more like a super family. They are closely related to most of the live bearers. In fact, one of the general descriptions is a variation between the live bearing tooth carps and the egg laying tooth carps. Live bearing tooth carps, meaning those fish like guppies and godeids and swordtails that we're all used to, and the egg laying tooth carps being the killifish. The pupfish, there are pupfish that kind of straddle that line. Some pupfish are live bearers and some pupfish are egg layers. And so They don't know quite what to do with that, taxonomically speaking.
Yeah, that just leads back to what we just were talking about, taxonomy, and it gets a little bit muddy sometimes.
Right. Right. So where are they found? They're not found in Antarctica. They're not found in...
I don't know why that delivery is distracting.
I know, right?
But that's not what I was expecting. I was wondering if they were found in Antarctica, so it's really good that you cleared that up for me.
I literally just wiped a tear.
Wow, I didn't think that would be that funny. They're not found in Australia, because Australia is just weird.
Yeah.
And then they're not found in some of the really cold climates. So like far northern Europe. They are found as far north as Ontario. They are found all over southern and central Europe. We do have killifish here in Michigan. They're found all the way throughout Asia, all the way to from Vietnam, all the way to the Middle East. They're found all throughout South America, as far south as Argentina, and then all the way up, like I said, all the way to Ontario. So killifish are found all over the place. They are found in more places than cichlids are.
Very successful little fish.
Yes, yes. We're going to try and keep the discussion a little more centered around killies that you're likely to keep in an aquarium. But you can't mention killies without talking about, you know, going into those. There are, I think, three or four native killifish found in Michigan. There are some fish that we don't expect to be killifish that are actually killifish that are found in North America. The Florida flagfish is technically a type of killifish. So they're found everywhere. They are found. The reason that they are found everywhere is because they are so adaptable. They find specific niches and fill those niches. They even live in, because I keep comparing cichlids, Lake Tanganyika as one of the most, probably the second most diverse cichlid habitat on the planet, second only to Lake Malawi as far as number of species. There is a killifish that is native to Lake Tanganyika.
And from my understanding in that lake, it's pretty much mostly cichlids, right?
Like, I don't know the percentage, but it's probably 90% cichlids, 9% catfish, and 1% other stuff.
Yeah.
There's a spiny eel group, which is not technically a true eel, but there's a spiny eel group that's found there. Not much else. It's 580 or so different species of cichlids in that one little lake.
Yeah, and if you're going to find a foothold among that many cichlids, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Okay, so they're found everywhere. What that means to us as aquarists is there's probably a killifish for all kinds of different tanks. I'm not going to say every tank because that's just too big of a word, but brackish water, aggressive tanks, calm tanks, species tanks, little tanks, big tanks... There's probably a killie that can go in most of those tanks.
Sure.
Is this a time to talk about misconceptions of killifish?
You know, if you could see my notes, you would see that that is actually the next line.
Well, these are scripted, so I don't want to break that illusion.
Only because I have a misconception off the bat that I just want to dispel just because it's top of my notes.
Yeah.
So do you know what the word kill means?
It means brook in Dutch.
Thank you. So it does not mean they're going to kill your fish.
They're very killy.
And specifically, it's talking about a small brook.
Yeah. The connotation, to my understanding, is the Dutch word kill would be similar to how we would say like a, what did I write down? Like a creek.
Yeah.
Like a seasonal little stream that can disappear because that's the type of habitat they live in.
That's the type of habitat some of them live in.
This is true.
I'm going to keep correcting on that one because that's another one of the common misconceptions out there. You brought up the seasonal term, and there are a group of seasonal, or what we call the annual killifish, with the genus Nothobranchus being the most common, most well-known group from that the group of annual killifish. The Nothobranchus killifish are absolutely incredible fish, but they somehow perpetuate that reputation that killifish are an annual fish, which perpetuates that reputation of, well, I don't want to do killifish because they just don't live that long.
I think this is a perfect time to talk about how that is a misconception that I think exists because people are conflating two scientific terms, lifespan and life expectancy. And those right. are actually two very different metrics. So life expectancy is defined as the average lifespan. So in scientific terms, it's like how long you can reasonably expect something to live most of the time. So
the and probably most of the time in its natural habitat.
Exactly.
Right.
So then lifespan would be like a maximum it can live. So your Nothobranchius example is their life expectancy is 6 months, but their lifespan is 5 years.
Right. Right. That's exactly it. I had a pair of Nothobranchius racovii, which is one of the shorter lived in nature life expectancy killifish. They have they're amazing. We'll get into those guys in detail. But in nature, they live probably 6 months, maybe longer than that. And that is from hatching to growth to reproduction to death in 6 months, sometimes less. If the reason that their life expectancy is so short is because they live in streams, they live in floodplains that dry up. Drying up is not really conducive to fish lifestyle most of the time.
They do enjoy water most of the time.
Yeah, most of the time. Right. Mudskippers and lungfish, you know, they've got some adaptability that keeps them around.
Those guys are cheaters.
But the Nothobranchius killifish, they die after, in the wild, they die after 6 months when those streams dry up. If the streams wouldn't dry up or if the floodplains wouldn't dry up, they just keep on living. Like I said, I had Nothobranchius racovii for 5 years.
Yeah.
And they are gorgeous.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, if we're still on misconceptions, I'll share my misconception about killifish as somebody who doesn't have much experience with them. But my bias is that killifish need to be kept alone. You can't keep other fish with killifish. And part of that comes from killifish keepers.
Right.
Because a lot of people who do killifish, and that's something we're hoping to change, specialize in killifish.
Right.
Because they recognize how cool they are, and they keep 20 or 30 different kinds of them, as you have in the past. So they're keeping species tanks and breeding tanks, but I had always had the opinion that, well, I have no interest in killifish because I keep community tanks.
That's another perfect misconception. And you bring up so many really cool topics and so many different directions to go with that. But to your point, some of these killifish absolutely need species tanks. In fact, some of them, there's a Fundilopanchex sogestii, and I never pronounce that name right, but it's close. The blue galaris.
Mm.
That one, not only does it need a species tank, not only should it not be kept in groups, but you really can't keep them in pairs for very long. A male blue galaris is just a mean, nasty, nasty fish that they don't keep their females around long.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think they're like true pairing in killifish is not common as far as I'm aware.
There, a lot of times they're found in such small little bodies of water that they will pair up.
Okay.
And live as. No, scratch that.
No?
No. No, really not really like not really pairing fish.
By they necessity, do, sometimes yeah, by they necessity. End up being pairs.
Yeah, they do okay in pairs, and many of them will do just fine in pairs. But as far as fish for community tanks, the group of fish called the lampeyes mm-hmm. are a great, beautiful schooling killifish.
Cool.
Can be they're small and they're a little delicate, so you got to be careful what kind of community tank you put them in, but they can do just fine. And then of course, you know, downstairs we've got our fantastic group of my favorite fish, my favorite killifish, the clown killie, Epiplatys annulatus.
Yeah, they're proof of how ridiculous it is really to lump an entire family or group of fish together as one. You can't compare that to a blue galaris directly.
No, they're so
completely
different.
Completely different fish. Yep. Cool. Well, I'm glad we got the misconceptions out right up at the front because I'm hoping that'll encourage some people to keep listening.
Yeah. There we go. So in light of some of those misconceptions that go right along with why people tend to geek out on these fish. And reason number one, you can keep many of them in ridiculously small tanks.
Yeah.
There are so many different species of killifish that you can keep and breed in 2.5 gallon tanks. I don't know that I would go much smaller than that with many of them. There are, of course, a few exceptions. There are some that max out at 3/4 inch as a maximum size. And they're peaceful, and they're easy, and they love plants. But a 2.5 gallon tank for so many species of killifish is all you need. So a lot of the people that really geek out on this fish, they can fit 15 or 20 tanks in a very small space and have 15 or 20 different really cool species of fish.
Yeah, with killies, you don't really need a fish room. You can get away with a closet.
Yeah. There are people listening right now that might go, yeah, that's what I have. So another reason that people geek out over killifish is it has so much to do with their diversity and their ability to evolve. So a lot of times when you walk into a really nerdy fish store like ours and you talk about, I want to keep this yellow cichlid. Well, we're not going to let you get away with just saying a yellow cichlid or come up with a common name. We're going to make sure that the Latin names are used because we want to know that we're talking very specifically about a very specific fish. When you get into the cichlid keepers, sometimes they get even more specific, particularly with lakes like Lake Malawi, Lake Tanganyika, where you have certain species of fish that have different variations based on where they were collected. So their collection location becomes important. Mm-hmm. An example of that would be Capatochromis borlei Taiwan reef is going to vary from a Capatochromis borlei collected from a different location. And it's going to be different color variations that are easy to recognize, easy to distinguish. The group of Tanganyikan cichlids, the Trophius moriais and Trophius deboises, there are so much variation within that species based on where they are collected. So cichlid keepers are going to care a whole lot about where they were collected. Killifish come from some crazy little bodies of water that change so much that they can evolve some differences during our lifetime. So some of those killifish keepers are not only going to care about the genus and species, not only going to care about the collection location, but going to care when that strain was collected.
For those people looking for a really good excuse to be a major geek, killifish are an awesome opportunity.
They are set up for that.
And I really appreciate that detail because that ability to track that information means that killifish keepers are keeping track of genetic drift between their captive population and the wild population.
Right.
And that's... No one else does that.
No.
That's true geeking out, and it's geeking out for some really good reasons.
Geeking out responsibly, we'll even say, like keeping track of how that species changes is how you prevent confusion in the future, hybrids and things like that from becoming an issue in maintaining those populations.
There are some examples of Fundulopentax gardneri. I believe it's the Milawe collection location, which is somewhere around Cameroon, where they were collected 20 years later, and you can see differences in the fish from the fish that were collected in just 20 years difference.
That's amazing.
And that's really cool. I mentioned genetic drift. That's basically genetic changes that just happen due to chance. And every 10 generations, genetic drift has happened significantly in just randomly, and that's just a metric. So like...
Right.
The population that's in the captive tanks 20 years ago and the ones that just came in, they're theoretically, even just like off the bat, very different. And then, of course, we can track that and go, yeah, they're very different.
10 generations in something like a killifish, where 10 generations can happen in less than 10 years. That's going to, in 20 years now, you've got two cycles of genetic drift happening.
Yeah.
That's going to make them different fish. That's so cool. I love these little guys. They're so much fun. Okay, so lifestyles of killifish. That sounds like a TV show that should go on A&E. Lifestyles of killifish. No. Where do you start with these guys? There's so many different things that these guys do. So the schooling fish, we touched on those guys a little bit. There are some schooling killifish, and the lamp eyes are a perfect example of those. They're called lamp eyes because the iridescence, the blue iridescence that shows up in the eyes of the lamp eye killifish is just, it's such an attention grabber. One of the speakers at the Grand Vale Aquarium Club showed some videos of lamp eyes in really tannic water in their natural habitat. And you could just see these little blue dots showing up everywhere. Lamp eye killifish are maybe an inch and a quarter in size at maximum size. Some of them are absolutely gorgeous, get some really cool orange color with those bright blue eyes. They're amazing little fish.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
And they
live
in groups. They shouldn't be too hard to spawn. You might need to mess with the water on those guys, but to keep them, West Michigan tap water is fine.
They are a fish that's really easy to like want to spoil. I will admit here that the lamp eyes we have downstairs now have been getting the surplus moina just because they just look like they deserve it.
Right. I think that's why the orange color on those guys is coming out as good as it is. I've noticed that the orange has gotten better on those.
Yeah, they're a fish that's very rewarding to be around, I would say, just generally. Like between feeding and watching them sort of develop, just, you know, when they came in, they were nothing super impressive, but just a little bit of like love and care, and now they're quite beautiful.
And they're kind of shocking to me because I'm not used to stuff that size being kind of outgoing, especially from a schooling fish.
Sure.
That lamp eye, they want to be noticed. They have that bright eye to be noticed. They live in areas where predation is going to be smaller. There's not a whole lot of other fish that live in places where a lot of the killifish live. That's why they can have these garish, amazing colors.
Yeah.
That makes them pretty bold. That makes them pretty out in the open. That makes them say, hey, look at me and notice me. You can't be noticed if you're hiding under a rock.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I don't know where else to go with the lamp eye killies. I mean, they're just, we need to keep those in. We need to keep those around.
Let's talk about, so just so we can define our terms more correctly, the lamp eyes are which genera of killies?
Aplocalyctes is the main genera, but there are two or three other generas that are considered lamp eyes.
Are the Oreisias in there?
Yes. Oreisias are another lamp eye.
Okay.
Yep. The rice fish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
another
how I know
another great group of schooling killifish, and the keeping them is going to be similar. They love plants. Some little perfect little nano fish for. I don't want to use the term nano too freely because sometimes people are using like a half gallon or gallon as a nano planet aquarium.
Right.
And that's not appropriate for a lot of these fish.
Using nano to mean the size of the fish, not necessarily the size of the tank, I would say.
Yeah, but a nano planet tank.
Right.
Right? I'm throwing that term out there.
That would work fine with them, but these are just little fish. They get about an inch long, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so a 10-gallon tank with a group of these guys, they want a group.
Yeah.
The boldness that Charles is talking about with those lamp eyes downstairs is because they're in a good group.
Are they shrimp safe?
Those guys, I think, would probably be very shrimp safe just because some shrimp are bigger than they are.
Yeah, they would probably eat, just like with anything, they're going to go after juveniles,
yep.
But
they're not going to hunt. They're going to be, most of the killifish are carnivorous, but most of them are also top feeders. So their lifestyle is not centered on looking down on the ground and see if there's something to eat. Their lifestyle is centered on looking up and see if something landed on the surface for them to eat.
Yeah. Nobody's going to miss up a good opportunity, but...
Right, right.
Yeah.
But those lamp eyes, I think, are going to be too small, even for... I would be very comfortable keeping those with a colony of shrimp and not worry about losing a couple. I don't think they'd get them.
Cool. Yeah. That's good to know. Yeah. And I think that is good information for people who might... Because I would never really think of a killie as that it could be shrimp safe.
Yeah.
Except for just that we've had that experience with the clown killies lately.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... Are the epiplatys considered lamp eye killies?
Epiplatys are not.
Okay.
Epiplatys are more fall under the traditional like killifish. Now, most of the traditional, I don't know, traditional is a really bad word to use there, but what people think of when they think of killifish.
Your typical.
Quintessential.
Average?
Typical.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Typical. they do just fine in pairs. My first experience with Epiplatys annulatus, the clown killy, was keeping them in 2.5 gallon tanks with in simply pairs, and they thrived. They did just fine. They reproduced very well. A 2.5 gallon tank with a big, huge mass of Java moss and babies will show up. Feeding them flake food. Feeding them better, higher protein foods will increase the amount of babies that show up. But you can successfully simply throw them in a 2.5 gallon tank with a bunch of Java moss and they will reproduce.
And that fish is just objectively super cool.
It is. It is genuinely my favorite fish.
Yeah. I can't argue against that at all.
Yeah. They're cool. So the Epiplatys annulatus, for a while, it was actually isolated from the rest of the genus Epiplatys. It was pseudo Epiplatys annulatus because they thought it was so different than the other fish in that genus. The lumpers and the splitters argued about that for a while, and the lumpers ended up winning, and they took the pseudo status off of the clown killies, and now they are back lumped in with Dejei and, I don't know, 10 or 12 other different Epiplatys species.
Okay. But all fairly similar size and temperament. And
I don't know. Dejei actually will get almost twice the size of a clown killie.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's good to know.
And a number of them will get quite a bit bigger. None of them have the rocket cool look that the clown killie has. The Dejei is probably the next prettiest, but it doesn't... You got to look close to see that it's a related fish.
Okay.
When you get into the Aphiosimian genus or the Nothobranchius genus, some of those are, you know, you got to count the dots to see if it's a different species, right?
Right.
They look really similar. The Epiplatys genus is just more diverse than that.
Cool.
They are what we call a mop spawning killifish, of which there are many. In fact, among what we would, again, we're going to go back to the typical killifish. There are the mop spawners and the dirt spawners, and we'll get into a little bit about what that means. But the mop spawners means they are used to spawning in some mass of plants. So killifish breeders make fake mops out of yarn, and the fish will go into that mass of plants or in that mass of yarn to spawn, and that's how the clown killifish reproduce.
So just a fun little story. I once read an article of Ted Judy talking about it was like fish breeding stuff. And he was just talking about how one time he went to like a craft store and he was buying like 4 things of yarn. And the guy's like, "What are you using this for?" And he goes, "Mops." And the like cashier was like, "I don't think that's very good for that."
Yeah, you get a lot of weird looks as a fish keeper when you go to the store, the craft store.
Could you imagine the conversation he would have had to get into if he had said, "I breed fish in them"?
Oh my gosh. Trust me, at the average craft store, they've heard way weirder stories.
So I briefly touched on the Aphiosimian genus. Mm-hmm. Aphiosimians and Fundulopanchecs, those end up having some fairly similar lifestyles. And those are some of the classic mop spawners, most of them. Again, those size tanks work, and just a few plants.
But those are bigger, right?
They do get a little bit bigger, but a pair of many of the Aphiosimians or a pair of many of the Fundulopanchecs, not Sogisci, which is the Bugularis, but in a 2.5 gallon tank or even maybe a 5 gallon tank, if they're a little bit bigger, they can do just fine. Fundulopanchecs gardneri, if somebody really wants to dabble in geeking out in killifish, the Fundulopanchecs gardneris are probably the number one best beginner killifish. They are so easy to breed. They do great in pairs, and they're absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, I don't think they are any less prettier than the not beginner killifish. Just a little more common.
Yeah. Easy to get your hands on.
This is the time for me to share. For this podcast, I did a little bit of research, and I came across a Tropical Fish Hobbyist article by Mike Helweg about Fundulopanchecs garderi, and it was literally titled, "A Fish with, quote-unquote, Pisonality."
That's a terrible pun. I love it.
I love it. But he specifically stated, and like you mentioning that the garderis are a perfect beginner fish, he says that like the garderi group, which is like a complex within the Fundulopanchecs genus, is probably his favorite of the killifish because they run the gamut from being some of the easiest to spawn to some of the most annoying to deal with.
That's another one that I've just put in a tank with plenty of plant cover and babies just show up.
Cool. They yeah, that's feed always really, good to have.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really cool. And you know, that's a funny thing that happens in the store sometimes. We mention that babies will just show up and people go, oh no, I'm going to get overrun with all these baby fish. I don't get why that's a bad thing.
Nope. It's never been a problem for me.
Nope. And with the garden rides, you're not going to have 100 of them in 2 weeks. Hopefully you have 3 or 4. Not in 2 weeks, but in a short amount of time.
Yeah, even if breeding isn't something you're interested in, for that fish with how hardy it is, just do a single male. Like,
yeah.
They're stunning, yeah. And we hinted this a little bit in the beginning, but we're starting into the getting into the group of killies that, to me, I think would make good alternatives, not replacements, the domestic betta.
Yeah.
Because you could keep a single one, kind of like a domestic betta, in a 2.5 or a 5 or a 10. It's beautiful. It's personable. It will come out and greet you, and it's just a little bit different.
Pisonable.
Pisonable.
Sorry.
I do have to add in here, though. Excellent replacement for a betta, but they jump. Mm-hmm. They are extremely capable of jumping. Mm-hmm. Now, wild-type Betta Splendid is also very capable of jumping. The reason the domestic strains don't jump as well is because those big, huge, long fins weigh them down too much. Killifish don't have that problem, and they live in these shallow little pools where jumping is like a way of life for them. So, yes, absolutely a fantastic alternative to Betta Splendens, to domestic strains of Betta Splendens, but do keep those tanks covered with killifish. And that's one of the few circumstances where I will say all killifish are proficient jumpers.
Yeah, better safe than sorry on that
right.
one.
Right. So the mop spawning killifish, breeding mop spawning killifish, one of the reasons I went down that rabbit hole with killifish is because of mop spawning killies. It is such a cathartic exercise, picking eggs out of a mop. It doesn't seem like it could be that big of a deal, but you know, if you're having one of those stressful nights and you just walk down to your fish room and so a mop, right? Think of a mop, the gray mops you use for mopping your floor. Now we're going to make a miniature version of that out of a skein of acrylic yarn. Not a whole skein. You can make a whole bunch of them out of acrylic yarn. But a floating mass of acrylic yarn or some polyester yarn or some synthetic material yarn floating in your tank.
Just so it doesn't decompose, right?
Yeah. Cotton and wool will decompose in water.
Yeah.
This sounds like a YouTube video.
Yeah, how to make mops.
Right. So one of those mops in whatever size tank is appropriate for the size killifish that you're keeping, and then picking eggs. So I would take small little food storage containers, take some water out of the existing aquarium where the killifish were thriving. You pick that mop out and you squeeze that mop as hard as you can to get as much of the water out of that mop as possible for picking eggs. It doesn't seem like a good idea to squeeze eggs, but killifish eggs are actually pretty tough. So if you actually crush one of those eggs, it was not a viable egg anyway. And then you go through that mop and you pick through it and you pick out those eggs and you pop them into that little storage container and you say, okay, I'm just going to get 5 more. And you get 5 more and then you see another one. I'm just going to get 5 more. And you just keep doing that. And all of a sudden you're just like, ah.
Yeah.
All you've been thinking about was, I just found an egg. I just found another egg. It's like finding treasure over and over again.
Sort of like the same like kind of calm routine of like a really peaceful water change or something like that. You know, like you kind of, when you get into the mindset of just doing it a task.
No, not at all. I hate water changing. Water changing is no fun for me. There's nothing cathartic. Water change is a chore. That's something I have to do. Sorry, I'm just not there with water changes. Picking eggs, on the other hand, I love it. With a lot of the species of killifish, if you're doing it every other day, getting 10 to 20 eggs every other day for a long time is very, very possible.
You know, honestly, it would make a great like science experiment for kids. If you've ever done the thing where you go out and find a butterfly egg and raise it up, like it's kind of a similar fun thing to do.
We do have a lot of teachers that come around. We need to encourage that activity. I like that idea.
I mean, yeah. We could even just have dried killie eggs for sale.
That sounds like a too early segue into the Nothobranchius killies. So raising killifish fry, we can go a little little universal on that because a lot of them are going to do well in some of the same early foods. Like I said at the beginning, most of them are carnivores. The newborn killifish with most species, actually the gardener eye is an exception, most of them will need some kind of live food to initiate that feeding response. Microworms for many of them, vinegar eels for some of the really, really small ones, and newly hatched brine shrimp.
I've had success with moina.
Moina, that's a good one. Moina is something that we're working on culturing here at the shop, so look for some more information out there soon on how to do moina well.
Yeah, we're getting pretty close to ready to start selling some of that moina. We were talking about that today.
I think that's cool. I think that will be fun.
And about how long do you think they need? Well, at this point, it's too tough to generalize, but like at least for the mop spawning killies, how long do you need to be feeding them live food before they can start taking crushed flake or prepared?
A lot of them are actually going to transition pretty quickly, sometimes within a week or so.
That sounds about right. I got the Nothobranchius forcii and flake food in like 5 days.
Yeah, okay. They initiate that feeding response, and all of a sudden they recognize that when things fall into the tank that's food, and that can trigger them onto an easier to do food. I, for a little side note here, I can't stand live food. All of you, many of you out there that are like hardcore fish geeks are going, what? What's wrong with you? Live food is the best. It's better than anything. Fish too great, blah, 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 blah. And you're absolutely right. It is better. I just can't stand it.
That's why I asked the question, because about a week is as long as I can keep a live food culture alive.
That's where I come along.
That's where we have Charles here, raising live food culture here in the store.
Yes.
That's going to get me into breeding some fish. Anyway, so live food, yes, it's better. Yes, your fish will do better on live food. There's some fantastic frozen substitutes out there that do great to keep some of the adults initiating that trigger, that feeding response. It's tough to do without live food. In a densely planted aquarium with lots of things like Java moss, where there's lots of places for things to grow, the infusoria and other organisms that can just kind of show up in your aquarium might be enough to get some of the fry through that transitional stage without having to do live food. You will get better results with live food, as much as I hate to admit it. All right, so the next group of killifish that we want to talk about are what are referred to as the annual killifish. These are the guys that give the reputation of killifish not living very long. They're found mostly in two different regions, Central Africa and then all kinds of places in South America. Central to Southern Africa, basically where the floodplains happen. That's where that's where annual killifish happen. In South America, Astrolibius, Cynolibius, and Synthonycthes are the three main genera, but there's five or six other like...
I already don't know any of those.
So those are the pearl killies.
Oh, yeah, okay. Pearls,
South American annual.
Okay, so that's like... It starts with like
Astrolibius.
Okay.
Yes.
I distinctly remember the first time I saw one of those because I walked into our basement and I looked into a tank and my first question was, is that a pygmy sunfish? And you said, no, it's way cooler.
They are really cool. And they look a lot like a Nothobranchius.
They have a similar look and feel to them.
Like the shape is... Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Really close.
I think that's that shape they get for diving into the substrate. Mm. They gotta be able to dig with their face.
Right.
Right. Yeah. That's what they do, is they dig with their face. In the African annual killifish, Nothobranchius is by far the genus that represents most of them. And there are five or six different subgenera within the genus Nothobranchius. Not that important as to which ones those are for the sake of this discussion, but there are some variation that happens within the genus Nothobranchius.
Nothobranchius is actually one that I was actually familiar with before I got into killifish keeping, because Nothobranchius furzuri is actually a model organism for scientific research.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
So there are specific strains that have been bred for specific things. There are strains of this species of killifish that can go through their entire life cycle in 3 months because they have been bred to do that. These are killifish that are used for as models in evolutionary processes, sexual selection, or even aging research. And some really cool stuff is starting to come out of it. Like some anti-aging research is being based around it's called diapause, and that's how the eggs can just freeze development. And they're like, there's a genetic switch that's being flipped. It's like they all have the gene, but some of them just turn it on and some of them don't.
Some of them turn it on for different lengths of time even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be, for anyone who wants to get nerdy, that's called epigenetics.
Epigenetics.
Genetics is your genome. Epigenetics is the bookmarking of your genome.
Okay. Okay, so that gives me a fun story. Nothobronchius rakovii, which one could argue is the most colorful freshwater fish in existence. Somebody show me something that's more colorful.
It's going to be another killifish.
It's probably going to be another Nothobronchius killifish, right? Eggers eye gets pretty close, and there's a couple others that get pretty close, but Nothobronchius rakovii is an absolutely incredibly beautiful, brightly, I would go garishly colored.
Yeah, that vibrant orange and like turquoisey color.
They're
it's amazing. It really is.
They're amazing. So I stumbled across a beautiful pair of Nothobronchius rakovii at a really cool event that happens in the Michiana area every year called the Killy Carnival. And that's where a bunch of the really cool geeks of the geek killifish people get together and talk about killifish for a weekend. And then they do an auction. And some of the most amazing rare an unusual killifish that I've ever not heard of that I had to look up show up at that auction. So anyway, there's my little shout out to Michiana Aquarium Club and the Killy Carnival. Carnival is spelled with a K in that circumstances, by the way.
The Killy community spelled with a K is one of the smallest, most like passionate groups of people.
Oh yeah.
Like there's not that many of them, but there are so many Killy events.
Don't get the name wrong and don't forget the collection location. So Nothobronchius rakovii, I know I don't have the collection location, which is actually probably why I got it for a really good price, because that male was, he was close to an inch and a half or 2 inches long and incredibly gorgeous. So I kept these in my 2.5 gallon tank, and to breed Nothobronchius killifish, the best method is to get some kind of food storage container that has a plastic lid, and you cut a hole in that plastic lid. I used peat moss, coconut fibers, some other kind of substrate, something to pretend or make the fish think it's dirt, some little pile of dirt. The Job's peat plugs were super good for me. I use those all the time. That goes in the tank, but without other substrate in the tank.
Yeah. This is me saying I go for the coconut fiber because peat moss is unsustainably collected these days.
Well, now I go for coconut fibers too.
Yeah. And so it's just, unfortunately, I think that's a direction that the hobby needs to adapt into. Me personally, I use ZooMed Eco Earth.
Okay.
Because it comes in like this nice little brick, and you can just literally chop it off, put it in water, it expands, and there you go.
I like it. Thank you for bringing that up, Charles. I appreciate that. All right. So you get your little container with your little hole in it. You don't put other substrate in the tank because they're going to spawn in whatever substrate they feel like they want to spawn in, and you really want to be able to collect the eggs. Put that in the tank. Keep that little container with an inch and a half of substrate in the bottom of it. Keep that in there for 1 to 2 weeks. I usually got impatient, so a week and a half was about as long as I could stand. then I had to see what happened. And these are annual killifish. What the eggs are designed to do, for lack of a better way to say it, is they dry out for a certain period of time, and then when you get them wet, the babies hatch. So quite literally, it's instant fish, just add water.
That's so bizarre. How can that be possible?
It's amazing. It's really fun too, to take this dry dirt that's been sitting in a closet for 3 to 6 months, put it in water, and fish come out of it.
Wow.
There are top scientists in the world that are still figuring this out.
So anyway, what I would do is I would take that batch and I would put it into a fish bag, and it's important that you always write the date the fish were put into the bag. That's the date you write in the bag. It's easy to do the math to see where you are. It's hard to do math to see where you were. Mm-hmm. Right? So if you put the date that you're supposed to take them out, and then all of a sudden it's 2 months after that, you go, wait, how? So write the date, use a Sharpie, write the date they were put in the bag. And then I had a spot in the top of a closet that I would kind of toss the bags. And I was never good at being patient. So the incubation period for Rakovia is listed at 20 to 28 weeks, i.e. 5 to 6 months, which for me meant like 4 months and 15 days.
For me, it would mean in a month or never. Right.
Yeah. And so I would, you know, at the shortest time I thought it was okay for me to hatch those fish, I would go and I would grab that bag and I'd put them in a little plastic shoebox container with about an inch of water, and I'd come down the next day, and sure enough, there'd be 7 to 10 little Nothobranchus rakoviae killifish swimming around in that container. And it was fun and it was really cool. And I did that for a while, and then I lost the female. And I lost track of how many bags of eggs I had stowed. So I lost the female. I'm like, okay, that happens, and things changed, and I started moving stuff around, and a year later, yes, a year, I looked in that closet, and I was cleaning out the top of the closet, and there was a bag that I had missed, and the date on that bag was 13 months earlier than what the date was. So that bag had been sitting, those eggs had been sitting dry in a fish bag for 13 months, over a year.
Wow.
And I thought, I'll throw this away. Let's see what happens. So I threw them in water without any kind of an optimism. I went downstairs the next day and I lost track at 60 babies. 60.
Wow.
There were 60 plus
compared to, you said six before.
Six or seven.
Yeah.
Six, sometimes 10 if it was a really good batch. So 60 of them. So when it says 20 to 28 weeks, push it to 28 weeks. I don't know if that was coincidence. Now, there's another thing that happens in the annual killifish that's a little bit of an assurance in case there's a surprise rainstorm where if it rains, not all of the fish will hatch right away. Because sometimes it can happen, it can rain, and then it can dry back up and then rain again. And if that happens, that entire generation of fish would be lost. And genetically and evolutionarily speaking, that just doesn't work. So there's a gene in there where some of the fish may hatch right away, but some of them may have a delayed hatch or even a hatch that happens after it dries out. The advice there is if you have one of those species, you wet that batch, and then you dry it out for another 2 weeks, and then you wet it again just to see if you get more fish out of it.
Let's next time we have some Nothos in, let's try an experiment and get as many spawns as we can and mark them for 1 month, 2 month, 3 month, six
Ooh,
month,
like
9 month, and a year, and a little bit after.
I like it.
And see how many we get from each one. That would be fun.
I think that's another thing to put down in the breeding lab for Charles.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be a lot of waiting.
Yeah. The problem is if we, you know, and I know we're going to do it, but we're going to start loading up killifish down in the breeding lab, and I'm going to go crazy.
Well, and it's like me and Ben are both killifish people now. So I'm like, who's going to stop us?
Right.
Like,
we could don't squeeze look at me. Yeah,
we could squeeze another 2.5 gallon. Just get that out of the way. The 2.5 gallons take up so little space.
I'm failing to see the problem with this.
I know. You're probably right. Nothobranchus egrezi. Absolutely gorgeous fish. 10 to 14 week incubation period. I think that might be the one we start with.
That's my personal favorite, yeah. The genus.
Yeah, they're great. Cortausi and Guntherai are both supposed to be what are considered the easiest of the Nothobranchius killies, you know, because some expert out there didn't have to work very hard to get those to hatch. Cortausi is one that I've done, and they were really quite easy.
So I'm going to talk from a scientific perspective
here. Cool.
A few tips for killifish breeders, and I'm putting this here because I think this is more true of the annuals than it is other groups of killifish. Killifish have such a short generation time that genetic degradation due to inbreeding is much more of a problem than it would be for other species we're breeding. So I think it's important to keep track of your broodstock. And if you're keeping multiple generations, try to outcross them with someone else's line, etc. And then when you are breeding, don't use your first male that develops for breeding, because the first male that develops is actually genetically programmed to have a shorter lifespan. So when I earlier mentioned lab strains that are bred to live shorter, that's exactly what they were doing.
Yeah.
If you want a longer lifespan for your Notho line, don't use that male.
That's really cool. That makes me think that the Rakovias that I had that were almost 5 years old, they probably were a later, who knows?
It's speculation, but it's an interesting train of thought to try and think about.
And this is not thoughts for like, oh, people are doing it wrong. This is just for like, well, if we're thinking that the killifish we get in the next, who knows what'll happen in the wild habitats in 20 years, but we might reach a point where our killifish in our tanks are the only ones we have in the world. So we need to try our best to keep them going.
Preserve those genetics, preserve those bloodlines, preserve the variation by tracking the collection location whenever possible.
Yes. As our environment changes, our rain seasons and things like that are being affected. Mm-hmm. So these are going to be among the first fish to really see the effects of that stuff. In my mind, fish that comes from small habitats and fish that come from specialized habitats, which a floodplain that dries up and fills up in selected seasons is pretty specialized.
Killifish is one of the few groups of fish that I think you can use this term, and you don't use this lightly. I think all of them come from very specialized habitats.
Yeah.
And that's why I've mentioned just these quote unquote pro tips, I guess, just because it would be very tragic that like people have worked very hard to maintain these killifish, and then in like 50 years we lose them just because they're too inbred to keep breeding.
Right.
That would be so sad.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Well, that's why it's a good idea to have a buddy who's breeding with you. You can swap back and forth and
there
things like that.
Yep.
The Nothobranchius, I think, is probably the best group of killies to be the alternative to the domestic bred types, both color and hardiness. Those guys are the water quality of some of the places Nothobranchius killifish can thrive. With many of the species is just so
there's
a joke about them being fish that live in elephant footprints.
Yeah.
And there's some basis for that actually being a possible thing.
It's kind of like how bettas come from puddles. Well, yeah, they can, you know, killies can come from elephant
actually
footprints.
Come from puddles.
Right.
Right.
And I think that this like, oh, it's an alternative to a betta. It's like right on the money, because that's why I honed in on Nothos, because Ben was like, well, you got a bunch of 2.5 gallons, just throw in a pair of Nothos and, you know, have fun.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
They're great. They're great. We always try to keep some of those around. Sometimes it's harder for us to keep the wholesalers. Let me say it this way. Traditional wholesalers don't keep many killies, other than the infamous Golden Wonder killie that you can find even at some big box stores. They're not that interesting.
Let's talk about the Golden Wonder. How does that fit in with the killies we're talking about?
So they are an Aplocalyctes. They are related, closer related to the lamp eyes, but they're mean.
And they're big, right?
They get much bigger,
comparatively. Yeah. Like how they get like 2 or so inches.
Yeah. So the Golden Wonder killie does get bigger. They're super hardy. They are going to be aggressive towards fish they look at as competition.
I mean, when there's so many, they're fine.
They're
but
fine.
There's so many cool Killies out there. I don't know why that's the one that the industry has landed on as the one that they're going to have.
They breed massively in Florida ponds. That's it.
Okay.
Yep.
That makes sense.
Yep.
That makes sense.
That's why they end up in the hobby so prolifically. Some of the other cool ones around that are worthy of mention, some of the notable killifish that are notable and worthy of mention. The Athenaeus mento and the other fish from the genus Athenaeus, they are found in the Middle East. They are found in water that sometimes can be over 100 degrees,
wow.
Sometimes can get down to 60 degrees. So they live in some desert oases where the variation is incredible. They live in pools of water where the water can flow in and never flow out, which means that, you know, we think Michigan water is hard. Some of the water where these guys come from is just, it's just ridiculously hard and almost salty because of the amount of dissolved minerals in the water.
Wow.
They thrive in Michigan tap water.
I don't know these ones at all. Is there a common name of one that I might know? No, they're just not available.
No, there's no common
name. The Middle East. How are we getting those fish?
No, they do show up in the hobby.
Oh,
they
really?
Show up with specialists. I've kept them before and they're gorgeous little fish.
Okay.
A little trickier because of temperature and the amount of minerals that they want in the water. But they're gorgeous little fish.
That's one to keep an eye out for.
On my keep an eye out list.
Cool.
Another one worthy of mention is the Tanganyikan killifish. And that's a fish that I've tried a few times to get in stock. If you get them established, they do just fine. They just don't ship. I've never successfully had Tanganyikan killie show up, even from some of our amazing wholesalers, and live more than a week.
Wow.
I don't know what it is about that fish and what it is about what adaptation they have to Lake Tanganyika that the other Lake Tanganyikan cichlids or that Tanganyikan cichlids don't have, but something about those fish, they just don't work.
That's a shame because they'd be a really cool top dweller for like a Shelly tank.
That would be, if you could get that to work, that would be an incredible biotope.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. I will try again at some point when I figure out, okay, we tried this and we tried this and we tried this. If we do this, do we have a better shot at it?
A genus that is one that's caught my eye anytime we've had it in that I don't know that we mentioned is, did we talk about Aphiosimion?
We mentioned them briefly as one of the standard of the MOP spawners.
Okay.
Aphiosimion astrales.
Yeah.
Have been bred in captivity long enough to come up with some specific aquarium strains, the chocolate astral and the orange astral. The wild types are just as pretty.
Prettier, I think.
Yeah, it could be. That's one of those that when you look at the genus Aphiosimion, you got to look really close to figure out which one you're dealing with. A lot of them are super similar.
Yeah, and whichever one though, they're super cool. The lyre tails on those, they've got those kind of extended fins a little bit. That's something that really catches my eye. They've got a really distinct profile.
The colors in some of the other fish in that genus, specifically I'm thinking of Egger's Eye and, there's another one that I kept in.
Egger's Eye Notho and an Egger's Eye?
Aphiosimion Egger's Eye.
That probably explains a lot of confusion I've had in the past.
Oh, yeah.
Those fish.
The Aphiosimion Egger's Eye is not a common one, though. That's, you know what? It's not Egger's Eye, it's Elbert Eye.
Oh.
But it's Elbert Eye with an E. E L B.
Oh, like Elbert Eye.
Elbert Eye, almost. Right.
Okay. Yeah,
that's the one I'm thinking of. Sorry, not cool. Egger's Eye. They actually are a little bit of a cooler water. They want it to be around 70 degrees.
Okay.
I believe they are in the mountains of Cameroon, but we should double check that.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And they are not an annual. They are a MOP spawning, beautiful, little, gorgeous, amazing killie.
Yeah.
Of which there are many.
And that'd be another good, because they're just so like decorative that like that would be another good single fish for a 2.5 or a 5.
Some of the Aphiosimions, Egger's Eye, no.
No?
Elbert Eye, no. In a 5.5 with something to keep the water from getting too warm, they could be okay, but they don't do well if it's 75 to 80 degrees.
I was just talking about like that is another one that is pretty enough to deserve a tank all to itself.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely there. So that's kind of a brief introduction I mean, I know it was an hour, but it's a brief introduction to the amazing group of fish that are killifish.
It is brief because I think we could probably go on for another couple of hours if we wanted to.
I think you could do an entire podcast on Nothos, an entire podcast on mop spawners. There's this other little group that the name is escaping me that my friend Howie is going to be mad. Like, dude, you didn't mention this group. That these little bitty guys that are really pretty, and I can't think of what those guys are called. But so there's it's such a diverse group. There's so many different varieties. It is legal in certain places in Michigan to go collect the native Michigan killies, and some of them are really cool and worthy of keeping.
Going to plug the GVAC page right now because that is actually a discussion that was recently on the Facebook page, was people wanted to go collecting native killies.
Yeah, it's worth doing. There's some pretty cool ones out there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, let us know. I mean, we would do a whole podcast on one of those if anybody wants them. And we do have set up now podcast@watercolorsaquariumgallery.com to send us those comments. So,
oh, cool.
Just give us some feedback. What is your favorite group of fish? Should we talk about them instead? Or do you want to hear a little bit more about killies? Or you have no interest in this whatsoever? But if you've made it this far, I'm hoping you at least enjoyed the discussion.
I think there's some cool fish for just about everybody in that group that we call killifish.
Yeah. I've got some ideas.
We always try to keep a few of them in stock here at the Watercolors Aquarium Gallery, located in beautiful downtown Grand Rapids. Come see us. Come look at our podcasts. Come look at our YouTube videos. That's probably the way to do it. In our YouTube videos, we'll maybe go into, like, we'll talk a little bit more about some amphisimians at some point. Because it's short. And if people are bored with it, they can just go to the next video. Yeah. I like that idea. Well, in the meantime, let's get some killifish keepers out there and keep those hands wet. Thanks for listening.